I too want to say thank you for Barbara and me. You all are kind enough to recognize that getting a little bit of time away is probably the best gift you could give us. I have realized that the lessons that we have are recorded most of the time on this little device, and it seems like every once in a while there's people who don't know where to find that on the computer and all that kind of stuff, and so I try to write out directions, and I finally realized I was probably doing that too often and too fraught with possibly making a mistake. So I found a place to get some business cards put together that had that address on it. That's the main thing that's on here, but it has other contact information, and it might be helpful for you all to have that tucked away someplace just to be able to let Barbara and me know when something's happening. I think many of you now know how to reach Bill and Becky, and that's a very important thing. So there's about 1,000 of these things because that's the price that I got. I think they may last a little while, but there's some in the back and there'll be some more in the front. And if you want one, take two, and we'll see how they go. Okay, but just be aware that they're here. And there's a document in there that gives you directions on how to make the lesson files work. And if you have any problem with that, contact me. I don't mind being a computer consultant. Right, Jean? Yeah. Okay. Now, for the last little while, we have been looking at an idea that emerges out of some things that Jesus said in the book of John. He said at one point to some of his critics, "You are of this world, I am not of this world." He said to Pilate during the time that he was in the arrest and the trial before his crucifixion, "I am not of this world, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my disciples would have fought." And then in John 17, in the middle of his great prayer for the disciples, and I believe for us, he says to the Father, "They, my disciples, are not of this world any more than I am of this world." And you begin to realize what Jesus was talking about was that we live in a physical, material world. There's a fairly popular pop singer who actually sang a song with close to that title. But there is a spiritual dimension to life that many times people don't see. The spiritual dimension to life is not all good, and the material world is not evil, although there are evil things in it. And so the question is, how do we live properly in the spirit? And we've spent several weeks now looking at aspects of that. What I want to do this morning is to move to the last of these and to deal with one final section talking about how do we live in the Spirit. As I do that, let me say a word of thanks again to Hawk Hawkins, who taught a couple of times in my absence. And looking forward into the next little while, let me give in advance a thank you to Lloyd Atkinson, who's going to fill in a couple of weeks. Several of you have asked me about my experience in Florida. I will simply say it was very exciting the first day and very boring after that. But it was neat to be sitting in a seafood restaurant on the pier at Cocoa Beach and to have your cell phone ring, and it's one of the astronauts who didn't fly that day telling you how glad he was that you had come, and telling you how much it meant to him and how sorry he was that he hadn't flown, but that it was a whole lot better to fly when it's safe than to fly when it's not safe. And so I do hope to go back down if the launch is when it currently is scheduled to be. Then I'm going to try to go back down for that. And I've got Lloyd lined up to fill in around those times. If anybody wants to see the little pin I got, it's on the lapel of my coat, and it is cool. It was fun to be down there and to see the things that were about to happen, and I think still will. All right, now, there's three things that I want you to take a look at. The first one is in Colossians chapter 3. If you can find Romans and 1st and 2nd Corinthians, there's been those four little books immediately after. The letters, somebody once said, you could spell out General Electric Power Company, and Colossians is the C of that GEPC. Colossians chapter 3. And I want you to look at verse 1 and 2. Colossians chapter 3, verses 1 and 2. Since you've been raised up to be with Christ, you must look for the things that are above, where Christ is, sitting at God's right hand. Verse 2 is the one that we're focusing on. Let your thoughts be on things above, not on the things that are on the earth. Because you've died, and now the life you have is hidden with Christ in God. And when Christ is revealed, and He is your life, you too will be revealed with Him in glory. Let your thoughts be on things above, not on the things that are on the earth, is the centerpiece of that little section. Now, before you leave that, back up one book to the book of Philippians and mark that in some way. That's where we're going to spend most of our time, is in the book of Philippians. Okay, so just note where the book of Philippians is. Hold your place there, the letter to Philippians. Hold your place there. And then I want you to come to Luke chapter 11. We just read in Colossians, let your thoughts be on things above, not on the things that are on the earth. Let your thoughts be on the things that are above and not on the things that are on the earth. The point that I'm making this morning is a point I've made before. We're going to just explore that today and see where that takes us, though. And for those of you who haven't seen this or haven't seen this enough for it to become part of you, we'll get one more chance at it. Luke chapter 11, verse 24. Jesus has given one of the strangest stories that exists in the New Testament. There is one that I think can match it. It is a parallel. It's on a different subject. But this is one of the stranger ones. And I want you just to read this with me, and then I'm going to take you to the Philippians port, and I think you'll see the connection. When an unclean spirit goes out of someone, let me pause for a minute. In Jesus' time, he was pictured as having caused unclean spirits to leave people who had been inflicted by those. Nowadays, we may have other ways of wording those things, but that's the wording that they used. When an unclean spirit goes out of someone, it wanders through waterless country looking for a place to rest. Not finding one, it says, I will go back to the home I came from. But on arrival, finding the place swept and tidied, it then goes off and brings seven other spirits more wicked than itself. And they all go in, and they set up house there, and so that person ends up worse off than before. The point of this, I do not want to be obscure, so I'm going to make the point now, and then I'll try to make it again in the middle, but I'll try to make it again at the end, so maybe you got a chance to remember it based on one of those three. You do not, I believe, get rid of evil in your life by pushing the evil out. You get rid of evil in your life by filling your life with good things, so there's no room for evil to come back in. Let me say that again. I don't believe getting rid of evil in your life works by pushing the evil out. What works is filling your life with good things, so there's no room for the evil to come back in. Finding the place swept out and tidied, it went and got seven spirits more wicked than it was, and they all came back in and set up housekeeping. And the person ends up worse off than they were before. I think that reflects the human condition in a way that I recognize based on things that I've seen, and maybe you do too. Now, I call your attention to something that I think is totally coincidental. I do not believe there's any spiritual truth or insight hiding in this. But what ended up to be the total number of spirits in this poor person?
Eight.
The original one plus the seven more, right? Okay. Keep an eye on the number eight, because it turns out to be useful when we go to Philippians. All right? Set your mind, set your thoughts on things that are above, not on things that are below. Philippians chapter 4 is where we're going to go, and we're going to spend the rest of our time here. There is in Philippians chapter 4 what I consider to be one of the most important prescriptions that Jesus gives for Christians who want a closer walk with the Lord. Hiding in that is what I want us to focus on today. So let me show you the larger setting, and then we'll go hone in on the smaller one. Take a look at verse 4 in Philippians chapter 4. Okay? there starts here a list of instructions. And we've looked at this list as a larger list. We're coming back now today to look at some, a little fine point down the middle of it, which I think has power that we need to explore. But what happens is, in verse 4 and 5 and 6 and 7, Jesus gives, through Paul, a prescription for things to do and gives you a consequence that comes when you do those. Always be joyful then, and the Lord is the first of these. And that's so important, he repeats it. I repeat, be joyful. Let your good sense be obvious to everybody. The Lord is near. Never worry about anything, but tell God all of your desires of every kind in prayer and petition, shot through with gratitude. And what's the consequence? The peace of God, which passes all understanding, the King James Version says, will guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. Is that to be desired? Yes. But something greater comes in the verses that follow. Watch the difference. Verse 8, this is where we're going to focus. Finally, brothers, let your minds be filled. You see the connection with Luke 11? Let your minds be filled with everything that is true, everything that is honorable, everything that is upright and pure, everything that we love or is lovely and admirable, with whatever is good and with whatever is praiseworthy. Keep on doing everything you learned from me and were told by me or have heard of me doing or have seen me doing. And then what will happen? What's the difference between verse 7 and verse 9? What's the promise in verse 7? The peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and your thoughts, or your hearts and your minds. What's the promise at the end of verse 9? The God of peace. Which of those is to be desired? Both. Which is more to be desired? Having the presence of God, not just God's peace. So, to me, this is important because it talks about stages in our relationship with God. We can have part of the benefit of God's presence without the full-blown presence if we only go so far. And the key to going further is filling our minds with these things. Let's get the number down. What are the things that are listed there? This is verse 8. I just want to get this list. Finally, brothers, let your minds be filled with everything that is filled with. Everything that is true. Okay? I want to get each one in turn. Just for fun, how many are there?
Eight.
See, I don't think that's totally coincidental, but you look at Luke 11, you look at this. Maybe there's one for each, I don't know. Okay? Everything that is true.
What's the second one?
Noble.
No, I want other words.
Honest.
Honorable.
Honorable. Mine has a sort of an English rather than an American background, so it sticks an extra U in there. I'm looking at the second word. Is there any other term used for the second of these things?
Good.
Good? Mine has good as the seventh one, way back down. So that's interesting. I'm wondering what yours has way down there. So yours has the second one is... I haven't seen if this thing has a mirror reflection. We'll see, okay? Let your minds be filled with everything that is true, everything that is honorable. He gives you one at a time a couple of times, then he gives you two at a time. Do you see this? Okay, what are the next two? Everything that is
right.
Mine says upright. Is there any other word for this first one?
Just.
And then the second word is pure. Is there any other term used for that, or is that universally used? Okay. Let your minds be filled with everything that is true, everything that is honorable, everything that is upright and pure, everything that is
lovely.
Lovely. second one? Admirable?
Good repute.
Admirable.
Good report.
Good repute.
That's my next one.
Good report. Now, make sure, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we're 6 in. Make sure that you're 6 in. Yeah.
Translation here, I have, it's not exactly lovely, but we love, and they're not necessarily the same. You can love something that isn't lovely.
Can I say everything that is worth loving? Maybe as a way of catching that thought.
Lovely.
Okay. Two to go. Mine says good. Walter, that's where mine was at. Yours says excellent. Did I hear it?
I have virtue.
Praiseworthy. I ran out. Somebody was still saying something.
Virtuous.
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 If we use this structure, I don't think the word virtue fits, so we got to find a way of altering that word slightly to make it fit. Well, my English teacher, Nick Nelson, will spell things. Virtuous. Yeah, that's right. They shift their descriptor, right? So we're going to shift it back.
Okay.
Virtuous.
All right. I'll agree to that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Actually, I think mine does that too. Okay. Is there anything else on the seventh one? And Walter, just out of curiosity, if yours has good up here, what does yours have down here on the seventh one? Yep, count a little bit to find this.
Mine has praiseworthy for the eighth.
Yeah, I was
going to
say mine's praiseworthy.
Okay, so yours are flipping
this. Yeah,
it's going to happen. It's going to happen. Okay. Actually, that's true. Mine has praiseworthy. So if yours has praiseworthy, put it for the eighth one. If yours has good, put it for the seventh one. And I will keep that word. What's the eighth one then? If there's another.
That's it.
Praiseworthy is the eighth one.
Seven is excellent.
Seven is excellent. This one is. Okay. Okay. Now your job is to figure out in the next 23 minutes, maybe 27 minutes, what qualifies. Let's turn to television for a moment. What qualifies? What qualifies? I have a friend who doesn't own a television. He says, I know there's good things it does, but the things it does so well, it doesn't do very often. I'd rather not have a television in my house for my children. He's on to something. I've got 4 televisions too many in my house. And my brother has a big screen, and I'm thinking about getting another. Found out this week, if I get another one, I have to pay an extra $2 for the contract people. So I may not get another one. I won't pay any more money. What qualifies on television?
There's some good things on television.
Name
the
few.
The Discovery Channel.
The Discovery Channel has had a series on planet Earth that is stunning.
Yeah.
It is stunning. It is stunning. The History Channel has some things about sort of where we came from and how we did.
They had the most amazing show on Martin Luther.
John Tappan and his brother channel. That guy who's sitting in Florida watching all the parts suffering. That John watches the Weather Channel, sit in Florida and watch what everybody else is suffering in Atlanta. How easy is it to find things that are true and honorable, that are true and praiseworthy. You have to work a little bit. Okay. How about the media? Books and newspapers and things of that sort. There's some good ones out there. Lynchburg, the Lynchburg newspaper last Sunday had a big, huge front page article that went over into the rest of the newspaper talking about a young man who had grown up in Lynchburg and had made some news that week. And on page 7, I think it was, there was a picture of me along with that young man's high school chemistry teacher. And we were standing together. They had a picture over there. They sent me that this week. If I'd remembered, I'd have brought it and shown it to you.
And autographed glosses are available.
Mm-hmm.
I've got my own copy of the picture because I was having somebody snap it at something.
What makes
ran the next day, though.
Say again?
That didn't justify what that paper ran the next day, though.
Might not. It might not. I don't know what they ran the next day, but we could probably. I'm suggesting something. Are you picking it up? I'm suggesting you be careful and not pick one of these and say, well, because it's that, then it deserves my attention. I think it has to be one of several tests. A friend of mine who's a physician stopped me about a week ago and made a suggestion about my physique. There's something out there called the BMI. Do you guys know what the BMI is? Few of you know what the BMI is, right? Okay. I was in the Army. I wasn't in the Army like Tom was in the Army. I wasn't in the Army like Joe and some of you, the military like Bill Edwards were. When I was in a very strange and weird way. But I was in the Army and I went through basic training at Fort Benning. When I came out of there, I was as thin as I have ever been in my life since I was 9 years old. And it turns out I went back and recalculated my BMI at that point in my life. And it was in the upper third of the normal range. One of the things he talked about was there's a diet out there that he says is one I might ought to think about getting myself involved with. And when you start reading through this diet, it says you need to eat food out of one of 12 food groups. And the food that you eat ought to be food that taxes your metabolism, that makes your body work to digest that food, rather than just the empty calories that sort of go through it. But he said, you're burning energy just to digest food. And one of the things it says is when you eat meals, and the nice thing about this diet is it lets you eat six times a day. I thought that was nice. I might move to that.
Yeah.
It had nuts in it. It had nuts in it. One of the things this diet says is when you eat, don't eat one thing. Eat at least two or three out of it had a list of 12. And I think something like that maybe needs it. If you take any one of these, you might see something a little different than if you sort of make yourself look at this with at least two or three of these clearly connected. Somebody said one time that if you want to think about the Christian walk, and I'm going to mess this up without a little bit of help from a couple of you who've heard this before to get it right. You think about the four C's. You think about calendar. You think about checkbook. You think about conversation. And you think about contemplation or concentration. I like this one. So, here's what they're saying. You want a checklist to look at
whether or not your life is lining up with what God wants your life to be. Take a look at what you do with your time. Take a look at what you do with your money. Take a look at what you do with the words you say. Take a look at what you do with the thoughts, the things you think about. And it's this part here that we're looking at today. Fill your mind, fill your thoughts with things that are true or noble or right, pure, lovely. And he doesn't say or, he says and. True and noble and right and pure and lovely and admirable and good and praiseworthy. Now let me ask you something. How easy is it to know whether something that you're thinking about lines up with this? I just want to see if your reaction to that question is the same as mine. How easy is it to know whether something that you're spending time thinking about, what you're listening to on TV, what you're reading, something like that, how easy is it to tell whether it lines up with this?
Feel good about it.
Is that an easy thing to do? If you simply stop and say, what I'm thinking about right now, does it line up?
It depends on the situation. Okay. You have time to stop. Sometimes you really know, and sometimes it's kind of one of those.
Yeah, I'm saying, assuming that you stop and think, yeah. How easy is it to know whether it lines up? I think it's easy. I think most of the time it's real easy. So the key is, do you stop and think? You turn on a television program and say, is this something worthwhile for me to watch? I fail that one. I fail it all the time. Every once in a while I curve myself, why am I watching this thing? So then I'll start flipping channels and see if there's something else, which is a problem.
There's so many of the things on TV that the kids watch that I don't know, but Lisa has been so good about teaching the boys that when we're flipping and trying to find something, they'll say, meanwhile, I can't watch this. Mommy doesn't let me watch this. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't know the difference. But it's not right.
What would be characteristics of things that are noble or honorable or honest? What would have to be true of such things? If you're filling your mind with these things, what would have to be true of those things?
That they don't bring any dishonor to God.
Okay.
Or to your spouse.
Yeah, I think you can make it even broader than that. Does it have, that was where I went, does it have a purpose that is positive? One of the things this diet says is that it's probably not going to be likely that you're going to be able to stick to that diet perfectly for every one of those six meals a day. So consequently, don't kick yourself if you slip off a little. But try to come back to that.
There may be some things whose purpose is neutral. But if you find things whose purpose is negative, red flags might need to go off. Or, no, I can't watch that. You know, you listen to what the children say, and sometimes it teaches you things that you ought to say. What's the difference between right and upright?
Right could be just correct. Upright to me is a higher plane.
That to me sort of connects back into the. Some of you have been to the 8 o'clock worship service. Some of you have not been to the worship service yet. Right? The pastor quoted Martin Luther. What did he say?
God's light is always shining in darkness on everyone. But sometimes you have to look up to see it.
Jesus gave a good example of the difference between right and upright in the example of eating meat to the sacrifice to idols. You know, it's perfectly okay if you do that, but if you're doing it in the company of somebody who thinks it's wrong, why don't you go to the higher plane and not pretend?
Hiding what you just talked about is the example that you put on. I've got an observation here that
is going to sound like it's quite a distance away from this, but I don't think it is. I work with students who aspire to be medical doctors. Now, if you're in college and you aspire to be a medical doctor, what had you better be doing with your time? You better be studying, taking science courses, doing well in those, and what else? You better be finding out what it's like to be a doctor by spending some time in clinical settings of some kind. You better be observing in a doctor's office, volunteering in a hospital, running with a rescue squad, doing something like that. Right? Now, why is that? I'm going to now turn it on its head. Because if you really are the kind of person who ought to go to medical school, wild horses couldn't keep you from doing those kinds of things. So since all the people who really should be in medical school are doing all those kinds of things, if you're thinking about going to medical school, then you better do them too. Did you hear the little twist that just came? You can do some things in order to make yourself look like something. And if you're really good, you might fool them enough to get by for a while. But the people who really belong down that road are the people for whom they have a calling into that. What I'm trying to say is somewhere in this list is a sense, are you doing this out of compulsion, or are you doing this out of gratitude, out of honor to God, and because you're fulfilling a call to this kind of living? If you're doing these things in order so that my example can look right, but standing behind that is compulsion and not, I really want to do what God calls me to do, then you're edging into hypocrisy, and that's never going to work. The world can see through that kind of stuff. Fill your minds and your hearts with things that are true, things that are noble. Of all the lessons that my mother taught me, this is the one I remember the clearest. Of all the lessons my grandmother taught me, this is the one I remember the clearest. They never said this as if they had a stick and were beating me with it. I could always tell they were setting this up as a goal that they wanted me to embrace. Not that they wanted to push me on, but that they wanted to make sure that I knew that there was a different way to live than the way some of the people around us would be living, and to be attracted to it. Why? Because it's right, and because it's upright. Do things because they're pure. Seek out things that are lovely. Where are the places in this town that are lovely? Where is beauty to be found in this town? Somebody said, as I was saying this, beauty is in the eye, loveliness is in the eye of the beholder. Well, there's some truth to that. Where is loveliness to be found in this town?
In the
Lewis Ginter Memorial Park. Yeah.
The Virginia
Arts Museum.
University of Richmond Campus.
Thank you very much.
I think
Maymont Park. Hollywood Cemetery. Where else?
Christmas lights downtown.
Yeah.
Reservoirs and creeks.
The VA hospital. Thank you.
Children playing.
In the trailer parks.
When deer come up in their backyard and
rain. And when little kids come into this church to study after school, whose lives are hanging in the balance, but there's people who work with them.
ESL.
Shalom Baptist Church and some of the centers where those toys that we saw in pristine beauty in our sanctuary move into places that perhaps might not look pretty to the world. There is beauty where God's at work. There is beauty of a physical, material kind. There is beauty of a spiritual kind. And sometimes the beauty of the spiritual kind isn't beautiful in the other terms. Preacher quoted you at 8 o'clock, Bob. He quoted from your Advent page. Don't forget the pure.
I was about to say there's beauty in the automobile congestion about time for service to begin.
There is. There's
there's beauty in a full parking lot where you have to hunt for a place. There's beauty in a room where you have to figure out where you're going to sit when you come in a little behind some of the others. There's beauty in having people who care about the Lord. There's beauty in having my friend Ralph say last night, I'm giving an award to the person in our class most likely to end up in prison next week, and having all of us look at each other until Susan Fish looks at me and says, they're talking about Bob Wilbur. Were you moved last night when you realized where Ralph was going with that? Is there beauty in the prisons? Not much, but it's there. Are there things in there that are lovely? They are when people respond. And they do. What's true and what's noble and what's lovely and what's admirable may not be seen if you can't see them through the Lord's eyes. It's easy to see physical beauty. Don't miss the Virginia Fine Arts. I haven't been there in a little while, and it's time for me to go back. Don't miss the sunsets. They've been spectacular over the last few weeks. I figure that's global warming or else the hot air coming out of Washington. Don't miss the physical beauty that God has put in this earth. That is part of this too. But we're talking about how do you live in the Spirit. Yeah.
I had the privilege of meeting some of the folks from Canada last Monday, and they wanted to see Richmond, and we took them up to St. John's Church and up through that area. And for some reason, I took them to Chimborazo Park, and they all of them commented on what a beautiful view, even with the industrial areas around, what a beautiful view of the river and what a beautiful place it was. And I was just glad I took them up there, and it was kind of a last-minute thought. So it is in the eyes of the beholder, I guess.
Bill?
Yeah?
I received your card last year that I can't get out of my mind. It was from one of the writers, and the caption was, I thought since you had arranged to send so many cards to so many people, that it would only be fair that I send a card to you. Thank you. And that was totally out of the blue. I mean, I'm not doing it for myself.
Some of us remember hearing from the nurse at MTV, a little boy was sick and in intensive care, and one of the women in our group was a nurse on duty down there and saw a Christmas card from his mother to this little kid. And it was one of your Christmas cards that the mother had crossed out and had rewritten. Because it was the only card she had to send. She was in prison. There is loveliness in the strangest of places. If your mind is alert to that, if it's not filled with all the things the world wants to fill it with, you got a chance to see it. Life that's lived with minds and hearts filled with the good things of God, the material and physical things, as well as the spiritual things, is a life in which there is less room for evil to take root and flourish. When you don't have this, you're vulnerable. Very often people tell me they can look back and see the moments where they made the decision that turned them, or made a decision and realizing it was a time when they should have turned and didn't. I think there is so much hiding in this. Let your minds be filled. That means the place swept out, tidied, and implied but not said empty. It went off and found seven spirits more wicked than it was. And the person was worse off than they were before. The world has given us a choice. It's got all kinds of things it wants to fill your mind and your heart with. A lot of them, I think, might very well be this, but a lot of them aren't. And part of living life in the Spirit is to turn up the detector system that I think all of us have. I do believe most of the time you stop and think, what am I doing right now, and does it meet these criteria, does it meet these things?
very often you'll know. Somebody gave me a book this morning that I had heard about, and the person knew that someday I wanted to read it, about the friendship between Franklin and Roosevelt. I'm right now reading a book. I'm actually listening to it driving back and forth in the car, about Lincoln building his cabinet out of the people who were his rivals for the presidential nomination in 1860, and how all that worked out to save the Union that we enjoy today. Those are books worth reading. I read some other books that aren't worth reading. They're just fun. But every once in a while, there's stuff to read that isn't worth reading at all. I know the difference. I don't always pay attention to the difference. I'm trying to give you a gift this Christmas. The gift is, Scripture tells us how to live in a way that life works the way God meant for it to work. That does not mean life doesn't bring you troubles and bring you hard times. It does mean when life brings those hard times, you've got a way of living through that. Listen to what the pastor says about Valerie Carter and that time in the summer when she lost her husband. As I was reading through all the things that dealt with this, I realized that I was seeing something that I wanted to try to put together. At the front of most of Paul's letters, he has prayers for the people that he's writing to. I want to put together a group of these. This is my prayer for you guys, for right now, for this Christmas season, and for into the future. Will you listen to it for just a minute? It's from Philippians and from Colossians and from 2 Thessalonians. I pray that your love will overflow more and more, and that you'll keep growing in knowledge and understanding. For I want you to understand what really matters, so that you may live pure and blameless lives until the day of Christ's return. May you always be filled with the fruit of your salvation, the righteous character produced in your life by the work of Jesus Christ. For this will bring much glory and praise to God. I ask God to give you complete knowledge of His will and to give you spiritual wisdom and understanding, so that the way you live will always honor and praise the Lord, and your lives will produce every kind of good fruit. And all the while, you'll grow as you learn God, learn to know God better and better. I also pray that you'll be strengthened with all of His glorious power, so that you'll have all the endurance and patience that you need. May you be filled with joy, always thanking the Father who has enabled you to share in the inheritance that belongs to His people, the people who live in the light. And so I keep on praying for you, asking our God to enable you to live a life worthy of His call. May He give you the power to accomplish all the good things your faith prompts you to do. For then the name of our Lord Jesus will be honored because of the way you live, and you'll be honored along with Him. All of this is made possible because of the grace of our God and Lord, Jesus Christ. And that's my prayer for you. Good day.